Here are six players we are putting our dicks on the table for. If you guys are unaware, it's a toxic masculinity term that basically means you are sticking your neck out for these guys in a PG-13 way of saying it there. So these are all third-year players that we think are going to break out this season. And I don't know about you, Danny, but I actually think the 2024 wide receiver class specifically is going to be one of the bigger storylines of the 2026 fantasy season because of how much higher we were on these players last year than we were the year before, than we were this year, and how they actually performed. McConkey, Harrison, Thomas, Neighbors getting hurt. All these guys just completely crumbled, essentially. And I do think the old adage when you and I started playing fantasy football was when a receiver enters their third season, they break out. And I'll let you kick it off with Ladd McConkey, who is going the highest in ADP of these guys and also is your number one.
Yeah, and if you just go to the career, you can kind of see how it unfolded in these last couple of years. It's a very similar case that I've made with Brian Thomas Jr., who, spoiler, is also going to be on this video. But it really just depends. It's the eye of the beholder in terms of what you think Ladd McConkey the player is. Do you think Ladd McConkey the player is closer to the 1.5 yards per out run player he was last year or the 2.56 yards per out run player he was as a rookie? And I'm on the side where I think he has the talent that he showcased in year one, and it's also twofold with just trusting this offense. We look at the Vegas projections. We look at the overall comfortability with Justin Herbert getting a guy in Mike McDaniel. We've talked about the benefit of the run scheme, but I also think that play action shot game that we saw those valuable deep targets in Miami, Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle, who's most likely to run those routes on this team, in my opinion, is Ladd McConkey. And I think he runs those routes extremely well. So when I'm looking at the profile that Ladd was as a first-year player, what Mike McDaniel has done for his passing offenses in terms of efficiency in the past, I look at this and I say, in round four, you're not going to have this type of upside. Who can be this year's JSN? It's the guy who got his own Clint Kubiak.
Yeah, I think you look at Chris Olave kind of being the comparison of what he could produce like if things go really well for him. Initially, I was a little higher on QJ and the ancillary weapons than I had been on Ladd McConkey, but it made me just realize I need to be high on everybody on the Los Angeles Chargers, including Ladd McConkey. So I need to get my exposure up on him. When I have Justin Herbert projected for 7.9 yards per attempt, 4,600 passing yards, 34 touchdowns, 9 interceptions, and in Mike McDaniel's history with the Tua Tagovailoa experience, they've been sitting around a 57% neutral pass rate, which is much higher than the Chargers were last year. I think that you just need to be high on this entire Chargers offense in totality. The one thing I'm kind of concerned about is if they add another receiver this offseason. That's the only thing I'm concerned about, because Deebo Samuel is still out there. Keenan Allen is still out there, obviously. Diggs is still out there. Ayuk, I guess, is still out there as well. I could see the Chargers add another receiver if they don't like what they see from like Trey Harris or something in training camp. So that would be my one concern with McConkey, is that I brushed it off last year. I took him in the flock league and I watched every single game of this Ladd McConkey season in 2025. I brushed it off when Keenan Allen signed there, and I didn't think he would be a major part of the offense, and he was, especially at the beginning of the season. So while Ladd McConkey had his big games, I think that there was a slight overration of what his talent was from his rookie season and what the level of ability could be, because I have heard many people call him this year's Jaxon Smith-Njigba. I don't think he's that good.
I don't know, man. It's really hard to say, and I think it's a very peculiar discussion, like we said with Brian Thomas Jr., where it's like, when a rookie flashes over 2.5 yards per route run, I get there's context here. QJ, probably a more well-learned target earner at this point compared to what he was in that season. We got Rondé Gadsden showing up down the stretch. Like you mentioned, maybe they add a receiver. Ultimately, though, we both thought Ladd McConkey had an extremely high upside when he was coming out of Georgia. He showed to be that player in his first year. We don't know what happened behind the scenes. Was he dealing with injury last year? Were his mentals fully capable? Like, we don't necessarily know what was going on with Ladd McConkey, but all we know is this guy flashed big in his first year, and he's getting the biggest single upgrade at OC in the entirety of the NFL. On top of that, maybe it was the case of the offensive line was so banged up, they need to get the ball out of Justin Herbert's hands, and that's why we saw Keenan Allen be so good in fantasy.
Maybe. Yeah. And again, the offensive line being able to hold up and, you know, actually protect for a long enough period of time to get Ladd McConkey the football. Like, I remember there was plays last year as a Ladd McConkey manager where you're like, oh my God, that was so close to being a 60-yard touchdown. That was so close to being a big play. And again, an extra half second, an extra second of Rashawn Slater and Joe Alt that they're going to give you because they're that much better than the tackles they were playing last year. That could be the difference between Ladd McConkey's 2024 season and his 2025 season.
So I think the main point just on the screen right now that's indicative of that, if I told you going into last year that Ladd McConkey would run nearly six more routes per game, you would be ecstatic. The issue, though, and I think this points to the poor offensive line play, he averaged only 0.4 targets per game less, and it equated to over 22 receiving yards per game less than his rookie year.
Yeah, again, it was mainly an issue of efficiency of the offense, like you're kind of pointing out. Again, I think that generally, these second year or these third year wide receivers breaking out and kind of becoming the players that we thought they were going to is going to be one of the biggest stories of the 2026 fantasy football season. Because last year we saw JSN have that third year breakout. Zay Flowers also a third year breakout. Both of them finish as wide receiver ones. And I do think that multiple of the guys that we're going to talk about today have that wide receiver one upside. So let me talk about Romo Dunze and a lot of these players in this video, for what it's worth. We've talked about quite a bit this offseason. So if you guys are regular viewers of us, apologies for the, regurgitating of argument here. Yeah. Romo Dunze to me is my favorite third year wide receiver breakout because he is not being priced like a third year wide receiver breakout, going at pick 60 off the board on Underdog. If you check positionally where I am at, on the site relative to the rest of the experts, I am the highest one on the site at 46 overall. Because again, similar to what I just said about the Chargers, I want pieces of the Chicago Bears offense. Second year, Caleb Williams and Ben Johnson is a big deal. I've heard Kurt Warner, Dan Orlovsky, people who played quarterback in the NFL, talk about how complex his situation and his offense is. So the fact that Caleb should be more comfortable in year two is going to benefit everybody. Now, the elephant in the room here is Luther Burden is a good player too, and Colson Loveland is probably the best player of these three guys as a target earner at this point in time. But the reason I like Romo Dunze, A, is because he is the cheapest of the three. He goes the lowest in ADP on Underdog, so it is easy to just default to the cheapest option. But I also really like Romo Dunze's ability in the red zone. When you look back on the first 12 weeks or so of last season when he was healthy, he was commanding targets, six or more targets, five or more targets in every game except for one against Cincinnati where he randomly dropped the donut in. Obviously, Danny, as the manager of Romo Dunze during that time, you can probably speak to it.
I think I traded him by then.
Did you trade him by then? Okay, well, you got him at the peak time then when he was just dropping touchdowns like crazy. I just think Romo Dunze's heel injury was a big deal. It shut him down for the rest of the year. And when he was healthy, him, Loveland, Burden, they're all in the field at the same time. Odunze was the guy who was the target commander. He was the guy who was leading the team in targets. I know you're going to have a rebuttal to that, but that is why I like Romo Dunze, is we have evidence of him being the target leader when all three were on the field.
Which, again, context does matter. Again, I'm not going to rebuttal the point overall because I do think there's significant upside. If Romo Dunze is the one on this team, there is a lot of value to be had. So I think when I'm looking at this Bears receiving core, because it is so ambiguous, these guys aren't necessarily priced at their median. Like, I don't think we're going to look back a year from now and think, oh, all three of those guys were priced exactly where they finished. Like, I think there's going to be maybe one person that slightly disappoints, one person that clearly breaks out. But ultimately, like you said, if you're on the basis of Romo Dunze was the one to start last year, got hurt, it derailed this season, and you look at him being the cheapest on the board, it's a totally fair perspective. Again, I have him at 61 overall, right in line with ADP. That's more so on the fact that I am big on Loveland. I think the stretch that we saw weeks 8 to 18 are that significant projecting forward, especially going into year two. He talked about this offseason, how mentally he's just so far ahead of where he was. That's a guy that I want to be betting on number one overall, no questions asked. And then when we compare Luther Burden versus Romo Dunze, again, Luther Burden did miss some camp last year, was kind of getting brought along. Ideally, we both said coming out that he would be best used in the DJ Moore role. And we actually said, like, as soon as DJ Moore is traded, Luther Burden can be a monster on this team. We saw when DJ Moore wasn't on the field at times last year, what it looked like in that small sample. And I know you're going to say it was a very small sample. At the same time, that was the type of prospect that I thought Luther Burden was. And the fact that we did get some proof of it in the NFL, some proof of that concept, it's hard for me to ignore. On top of that, Ben Johnson talking about Luther Burden, I'm buying stocks of him this offseason. Mm-hmm. It's just hard for me to get Romo Dunze higher than ADP when I'm just so high on those other two. But at the same time, this is the type of third-year profile I typically would be betting on.
Yeah, I mean, the comps list being Deebo Samuel, Keenan Allen, Chris Godwin, and Drake London, when, as a prospect, Romo Dunze's best comparable was Drake London.
Yeah.
I think it's inarguable that he was a better prospect than Burden, in my opinion. I think he was a better prospect
for me
through and through because he went in the top 10 also. I think that gives him an edge versus the second round capital that Burden had. It's going to be a toss it up in the sky and we'll see who's right.
Yeah.
Give me the cheapest option. And that is Romo Dunze.
Totally fair. So
that is exactly where I'm going with my third year breakout there. who are you talking about here with your next one? And both of these guys had pretty wretched seasons that we're about to talk about.
So it's funny because you mentioned taking your stance on the Bears receiving corps and you're like, well, let me just get the cheapest one here. I technically am taking the most expensive Jaguar, but it's just on the basis that I think it's very clear how Brian Thomas Jr. is going to be used this year. And it's very clear he's much healthier than he was last year. Like I said with Ladd McConkey, do you trust the 1.58 yards per out run we got as a second year player or the 2.55 yards per out run, the top 12 overall season, the near 17 point per game player that Brian Thomas Jr. was as a rookie? We already knew last year he was dealing with that shoulder injury. He was dealing, I believe, with what, an AC joint sprain, if I'm not mistaken. That was the same injury that held Bucky Irving down.
Yeah, and here's the thing. Like, not only was it the shoulder injury, he also was dealing with a wrist injury at points in time. He had ankle injuries at points in time. He was on the injury report basically every single week last year. On top of that, from a personal angle, one of his best friends committed suicide before the season, yeah, which also could have affected his mentals and preparation and all that kind of stuff. So the fact that the very first thing that Brian Thomas Jr. said when a mic was in front of him this offseason was, it doesn't hurt to run anymore. And again, as I talk about every offseason, the biggest indicator, bar none, of future fantasy success is past fantasy success. When you are a 20, not even 24-year-old receiver who has already finished as a top 12 receiver in points per game and a top 4 receiver overall as a rookie with his quarterback injured for half of the season, that is a huge marker that he should not be going where he's going. I think Parker Washington's a decent player. I think Jacoby Myers is a good player. You and I are both high on Travis Hunter. But the fantasy, like the fantasy compass here points to Brian Thomas being much better than the rest of the receivers in this core. And as I've talked about, they drafted a second round and a fifth round tight end. James Gladstone comes from the Rams scheme, who made the 13 and 12 personnel wave popular in the NFL. If there's only going to be one receiver on the field, 20, 30% of the routes for this team, it's going to be Brian Thomas Jr. He's the ex receiver of this team.
Exactly. Who's going to be the quote unquote Mike Evans of a Liam Cohn offense? It's going to be Brian Thomas Jr. And it's funny to say this now because going into last year, there was a big discrepancy where these guys were going in fantasy drafts. Brian Thomas Jr. was going in the top 12, top 14. George Pickens was a fifth round pick. This is this year's George Pickens. If you want to hit on a guy who is attached to a very good offense, going into year two of that Liam Cohn scheme, has the vertical separation to be able to create big plays, 6'3", 4'3" speed, it's Brian Thomas Jr. And let me just leave it at this. Go to his averages, Corey. Wide receiver 12 as a rookie in points per game. Wide receiver 47 as a second-year player. Wide receiver 31 isn't even halfway.
No, not even halfway. It is, it's an easy click, man. I really do think that when I do that early round wide receiver video, when I do the wide receiver league winners video, he's just going to stick out like a sore thumb. He doesn't belong going where he's going around. And that includes the next guy that I'm going to talk about, because Brian Thomas Jr., through 2 years of his career, has proven much more than Marvin Harrison Jr. through 2 years of his career, even though Marvin Harrison was the better prospect. But both of them were first-round picks. Marvin Harrison is currently my highest-rostered third-year player, period, on Underdog. I have him on 25% of my teams. And again, even though he doesn't have the same level of marked success as Brian Thomas did in his rookie season, I think that through two seasons in the NFL, Marvin Harrison Jr. has been unfairly judged by the fact that his name is Marvin Harrison Jr. His rookie season and his second season prior to the appendectomy and the injury and stuff, it was going better in 2025 than it was going in 2024. He only played three games with Jacoby Brissett, didn't really play a full allotment of snaps against Atlanta. Tampa Bay, he out-targets Michael Wilson down the stretch in a game where he was in and out of the lineup. I started him against Tampa Bay, and he ran a very minute amount of routes, and he was literally limping on and off the field during that game, and he still had seven targets, six catches for 69 yards. Really, the only time we... A quick reminder that today's video podcast is brought to you by Underdog Fantasy. Underdog is the best place to play this best ball summer. All you do is draft. There's no waivers, there's no trades, no in-season management. You just draft your teams, get refined for your home redraft leagues, and collect your winnings at the end of the year. $2 million and $15 million in total prizes to the first place winner of Best Ball Mania 7. Definitely something we are max entering. We are very excited to get refined for our own home leagues, and we want you to join us. Using our promo code FSE at sign up and first deposit on Underdog and first play on Underdog, we'll get you our redraft rankings manifesto, our draft guide, and our dynasty draft guide for free. That's it. All you have to do is sign up, make a play on the site, and you will get both of our draft guides and our weekly rankings in season to help you with your start-sit decisions for free. Check that out if you guys are interested. Head to Underdog Fantasy and use the promo code FSC at sign up and first deposit. I saw him with a healthy Jacoby Brissett and a healthy Marvin Harrison Jr. were these two games against Dallas and Seattle. 22.6 points per game against Dallas, 14.3 points per game against Seattle. I think that we were robbed of a Marvin Harrison breakout down the stretch. I don't expect the Arizona Cardinals to throw at the level that they were throwing down the stretch last season, but I do expect them to be one of the more pass-heavy teams in the league. Mike Clay and me both have them as top five pass rate, overall pass attempt teams in football, as long as Jacoby Brissett's the starter. When Carson Beck gets in there, it might change things. But generally speaking, I think that Marvin Harrison Jr. is going to have the requisite volume in the offense. I am not as concerned about Michael Wilson. I think he was playing Marvin's role, and that is partially why he broke out down the stretch. And then also, too, third-year breakout, an ex-receiver. He's performed very well in reception perception despite not having the fantasy points per game that we wanted him to have. He beats man coverage, and I think he's going to take a step forward this year.
Yeah, I'm comparatively lower than you are just simply off the fact that it's hard for me to get there with the Cardinals offense. Like we saw in those two games, he ran 82 routes. The big spike week he had was against arguably the worst pass defense we've seen in the modern era with the Dallas Cowboys last year. Like it's hard for me to get there just based off the fact that, again, if they're throwing the ball 35, 36 times per game, that would be a significant volume decrease. I do think Michael Wilson should have some merit with how we finish the end of the year. Trey McBride's there, and Jeremiah Love, in my opinion, even as a rookie, could command 65, 70 plus targets out of the backfield. I ultimately understand the heuristic that this was an elite prospect. He's going into year three. He has had some flashes. So I don't mind getting aggressive with his ranking. It's just for me, it's hard to get there with the Cardinals offense, which is why I'm lowest on the site at 71.
Yeah, I have him projected for a non-outrageous 23% target share. Trey McBride with 25% target share. So I have him second on the team in target share. I have him projected for 1,068 yards and 6 touchdowns on the basis that when Jacoby Brissett is starting games, he's throwing the football roughly 35 times per game, which is about 3.5-4 times less per game than he threw it last year. So Generally speaking, again, I think the Cardinals are going to be bad. They're going to be playing from behind. They're going to have to throw the ball quite a bit. Yes, Jeremiah Love is a huge upgrade to the running back core, but Marvin Harrison taking a step forward and being the first read target, the primary target on most of these plays that don't go to Trey McBride, who's obviously the best target earner on the team. I do think that we're just going to see a different Marvin Harrison, and probably the Marvin Harrison we would have seen had he not had his appendix removed midway through the season.
Which is totally fair. Again, being bullish on Marv, it's very similar, again, what I said with Luther Burden. We mentioned the small sample size. You mentioned the small sample size with Jacoby Brissett in those two games. What you believe the player will be isn't necessarily something that's proven right now, but it's just a natural trend to follow. Talented player going into year three, a lot healthier. What if he gets exponentially better? That's kind of why I'm so high on Luther Burden in the sense that despite the small sample, I saw those spike weeks. That's how you're at with Marvin Harrison Jr., I'm assuming as well.
Yeah. And again, I just want to reiterate one more time that in Matt Harmon's reception perception, he has performed very well despite not being the greatest for fantasy. Like
third round pick last year.
Yeah. And not to mention too, like, his usage was not varied. He was not moved around the formation. He was never moved into the slot. And not that I think Mike LaFleur is some massive, you know, guru mastermind, but they did find ways to get Garrett Wilson the football in New York in more creative ways than just aligning him against, you know, an ex wide receiver versus the number one corner. So maybe the deployment changes up a little bit. I'm excited about the discount I'm getting on Marvin. I don't have to draft him in the first round like I did as a rookie. I don't have to draft him in the third round like he did last year. You're getting a significant discount on Marvin Harrison in potentially his best situation yet. So, Danny, I'll let you talk about your final third-year player, which is definitely the riskiest guy of this video by far, and then I'll talk about mine here. Jonathan Brooks, who coming into his rookie season in 2024 was considered to be the best running back in his respective draft class. Now, at just age 23 years old, barely 23 years old still, we are two ACL tears and a couple, you know, years removed from him being thought of as a high-end fantasy running back. Why are you in on Jonathan Brooks right now?
Yeah, and it's funny because you go to the career and there's nothing to base this off of. This is just based on the fact that this was a running back that we were both extremely high on, had as the number one, if not number two in that class, because Trey Benson had a similarly close prospect profile. And this was the running back that the team traded up into the top 50 to select. This is kind of twofold for me with why I'm on Jonathan Brooks. A, because I think this is a legit three down stud profile. A guy that was at about 4 yards after contact per attempt his final year at Texas, had a big receiving profile coming out of Texas, 6 foot, 215 pound frame. We both comp to a guy like Aaron Jones, who, by the way, Aaron Jones, a lot smaller than that. So if he can be a bigger Aaron Jones, there's a lot of meat left on the bone here for an offense that we expect to run the football a ton. And when I look at this situation, it's both a pro Jonathan Brooks case and an anti Chuba Hubbard case. And I'll send you this graphic, but Dave Canales, the last 2 years, this was a tweet from Ryan Heath. Very simple meritocracy. Whoever is playing the best in his backfield is going to get the majority of the volume. Weeks 1 to 3 in 2024, Chuba Hubbard, Miles Sanders were kind of splitting the time there. Chuba Hubbard, 5.19 yards per carry on a 60% design carry share. Miles Sanders, 3.11 yards per carry on a 31% design carry share. What happened weeks 4 on? Chuba Hubbard's design carry share grew to 81%. So it was at 60% in the first 3 weeks. He showed he was clearly the best back on the team, jumped to 81%. Last year was kind of the inverse, and people will point out, well, Chuba Hubbard was playing injured down the stretch. Even before the injury, he was simply inefficient, wasn't creating breakaway runs, wasn't breaking tackles. Last year, in the first 6 weeks of the season, Rico Dowdle was at 5.83 yards per carry overall, but only a 31% design carry share. That jumped to 61% with Chuba Hubbard on the field after that stretch. My case here is that Dave Canales is clearly prone to playing the best back in his backfield, and I believe that's Jonathan Brooks. Because like I said, lowest explosive run rate of any runner in the NFL last year, that was Chuba Hubbard. 47th of 49 qualified running backs in yards after contact per attempt, which was a big strength for Jonathan Brooks. The only question mark at this point for Jonathan Brooks is the health, but you had Dr. James on. He said in that video, 60% of running backs with two ACL tears end up getting back to pre-injury capacity. This was a prospect that was going in the top 10, the top 8 of some of your dynasty rookie drafts. If he's anywhere close to that type of player, not only do I think he beats out Chuba Hubbard, I think an 18 to 20 opportunity per game type of workload is in the range of outcomes.
And that was, by the way, despite tearing his ACL at the end of his junior season.
Yeah.
If he never, again, let's assume that James is correct.
Top 5 pick.
And he finishes his season and is the Doak Walker Award winner and goes in the first round, most likely, because he went in the top 50 with the ACL tear. So he probably would have went in the first round without the ACL tear. We could have been talking about a guy that was going among the likes of Malik Nabers and Drake May and Jaden Daniels and those guys in Dynasty rookie drafts that year. When you go, Danny, two receptions or more per game, second round picked running backs, you have Joe Mixon, Javonte Williams, Dalvin Cook, DeAndre Swift, Jonathan Brooks, Zach Charbonnet, and Cam Akers. That's a good list to be a part of, courtesy of the FSC prospect model on the site. So again, Jonathan Brooks, assuming he's healthy, which is a big hurdle right now, but if a week from now, 2 weeks from now, we hear Jonathan Brooks has been cleared for training camp, 100% of the activities, he's good to go, he is going to skyrocket in ADP, and he is going to flip Chuba Hubbard, guaranteed, because nobody really buys that Chuba Hubbard is going to be the lead back of this team anymore. The only reason people are taking Chuba Hubbard right now is because they're pessimistic on the injury of Jonathan Brooks, but it is 18, 19 months post-second ACL recovery. If he's cleared 100% for activities, he has his wheels up. He's ready to go.
And I've been clowned on this take before, but I'm going to hold strong. You go to the general right now. I have him ranked at 80 overall. You go to my rankings on the site. He's straight up over Chuba Hubbard. If I have to make this,
he'll be there eventually for everybody.
If I have to make the decision on the clock, I'm taking him over Chuba Hubbard. Now, obviously, I don't have to take him where I have him ranked. He has 102 overall ADP. I can even wait around, get him around closer to 90th overall. And on top of that, I'm never going to have to take him over Chuba Hubbard because Chuba Hubbard's going off the board in the top 75. But if I had to, they were both there at the 88th overall pick. Jonathan Brooks is going to be my guy every time.
Yeah, and again, when you look at a consensus multi-site ADP, Jonathan Brooks going even a little bit lower on some platforms. Is Sleeper, he's going up pick 138, man. ESPN at 116. Yahoo and Underdog and CBS are some of the highest on him, FFPC as well. I don't know why. So kind of a boomer platform. But generally speaking, Jonathan Brooks definitely a worthwhile swing. I will talk with the final guy of this video, the only quarterback of this video, because a little too obvious to talk about Drake May, Jaden Daniels, and Caleb Williams. Give me Bosif Nix, man. This guy, top 10 quarterback in points per game in back-to-back seasons as a first and second-year quarterback. Danny, generally speaking, rookie quarterbacks and second-year quarterbacks aren't excellent for fantasy. Now, tell me if this makes sense. Bo Nix, top 10 quarterback in back-to-back years. He's quarterback 13 in ADP right now, despite having Jaylen Waddle added to his situation. So I'm not sure what the hell is going on with his ADP. I'm not the only one that feels this way. When I talked about Bo Nix in the league winning quarterbacks video, he was on the thumbnail of that video for a reason. People were like, I don't know how the hell he's going so low. Why is Jackson Dart going over him in ADP? Why is Matthew Stafford, who's a statue quarterback, when Bo Nix runs the ball five times per game on average the last 2 years, why are they going over him in ADP? I don't know, dude, but all I know for sure is that Bo Nix is quite literally the best pick on the board at quarterback, period. Regardless of ADP, regardless of round, he is always my backup plan. When I'm fading quarterbacks early on in my drafts, in the back of my mind, I'm always thinking, well, Bo Nix will be there for me in the ninth round or the 10th round.
And I thought I would be a little bit more pessimistic because I'm like, oh, he's coming off that ankle injury and it happened late in the year and how's it going to look like? But I go on the site, I'm third highest on the site because I don't see how you can have this guy outside of your top 100 with what he's done.
No, I don't see it either. And the ankle injury is a non-issue. He was already cleared for stuff in the OTAs and mini camps portion. And again, they have more added weapons. Jonah Coleman comes in, Jalen Waddle comes in, Justin Jolie, the tight end who they drafted late, I really liked as well. I just think that he has one of the best supporting casts around him. He has the best offensive line in pass protection in football last season. And he also threw the ball 612 times last year. So you'd think, Danny, wouldn't it be logical to think that the Denver Broncos with a top 3 to 5 defense in football wouldn't throw the ball a lot because they don't need to? They can run the ball and play clock and play to their defense. They didn't give a shit. They threw the ball anyways. And now they have a better receiver one.
Yeah, so I guess that would be twofold for me. Is it the chicken or the egg? Did they throw the ball a ton last year because they wanted to throw the football a ton last year? Or did they did that because they wanted to pivot after J.K. Dobbins got hurt? R.J. Harvey, they didn't trust him to a full between the tackles workload. But I think it's twofold. Like you said, even if they just throw the amount they did last year, if you say, oh, adding Jalen Waddle versus J.K. Dobbins coming back and Jonah Coleman being added, let's just say those offset, you're still getting a guy that was a top 10 quarterback the last 2 years at quarterback 15 off the board.
So you'd think that would be the case, Danny, but can I interest you in this? When J.K. Dobbins was healthy and the starting running back for the Denver Broncos, they averaged 37.3 pass attempts per game, which is a very high number. Do you know what they average without J.K. Dobbins as the starting running back?
It's going to be somehow less if you're framing it like that.
37.57, basically exactly the same. So it didn't really have an impact on how much they threw the ball. They were just inherently a pass-heavy offense, and I've talked about this before with Denver too. Sean Payton's been a great play caller in the NFL for 20 plus years. The fact that he handed over the play calling to Davis Webb must mean a lot about Davis Webb. And I'm expecting Davis Webb to be one of the hottest head coaching candidates on the market by the end of the offseason, because Denver, one of my top 7 offenses in points per game in my projections, I am all in on this team. Jalen Waddle, I'm all in on. I wasn't high on RJ Harvey. I wasn't high on some of the guys on the team. I'm just going to take the blanket statement approach with certain teams, Broncos, Chargers, Jaguars, teams like that. I'm just going to be in on everybody, frankly. I could be wrong about certain splits and target shares and stuff. I'm just going to be in on everybody. So Bo Nix, the final guy that we talked about here, those were third-year players, third-year breakouts that we have our dicks on the table for because we think they're going to break out. And again, one of the biggest storylines of the season could be all these third-year wide receivers bouncing back, some of these third-year players bouncing back. So we didn't talk about Brock Bowers, who was obviously going the highest of the third-year players in this video. That one was a little bit too obvious. But hopefully you guys enjoyed. Leave a like if you did. Subscribe to the channel if you're new around here. Make sure to check out everything we're doing over on flockfantasy.com. You can get access to everything that we talked about, the rankings, the ADP charts, the draft sheets, the prospect model, trade calculator, everything there. Using the season pass that is available right now, $34 from now until January 1st, you will be covered. Or you can check out our draft guide for free by signing up over on Underdog Fantasy. When you sign up on Underdog, you can draft. Get ready for your redraft leagues. We always give the analogy of training with Mike Tyson to get ready to fight your high school bully. It's the sharpest ADP out there. You can win massive, massive prizes in Best Ball Mania, $2 million to first place. And by playing Best Ball and signing up on Underdog, you will get access to our draft guide totally for free. Our projections, Dynasty Redraft, and weekly start sit rankings, bonus content, all for free to you within 24 hours of your first sign up and play on the site on Underdog there with the promo code FSE. Link down below in the description. But with that being said, peace out. We'll talk to you soon.